Thank you for listening to MoneyWeb at midday. In the next 30 minutes, we'll put context around the numbers, perspective around the politics, and clarity around the choices facing us in South Africa. Welcome to MoneyWeb at midday. I'm Duduzile Ramela in for Jeremy Maggs today. Here's what you can look forward to. South Africa's vets are rejecting private gatekeeping in FMD rollout. We also take a look at workers who are under pressure and calls for a fuel levy cut ahead of the price surge tomorrow. We also look at the oil crisis and how it could wipe out billions of dollars in global ad spend. We end off the show taking a look at which car you can get an order to save given the rise in fuel prices tomorrow. Government's new foot and mouth disease vaccination draft is facing opposition. The country's veterinary profession is pushing back hard, warning the provision is legally unsound and could undermine the outbreak response. At the heart of the matter is a requirement that SAVC registered veterinarians must also obtain approval from private body RMIS before taking part in the national vaccination program. SAVA and RUVA SA have condemned this. We speak to the president of the South African Veterinary Association, Dr. Ziyanda Majokweni, who's going to be telling us more about this. Thank you very much, Doc, for your time. Let's start with some context as to how we got here.
All right. I think how we got here was that there was a version of the scheme that was submitted as part of the submission from the Department of Agriculture in response to the Sake Liha case. And that version of the scheme indicated quite a few areas that were concerning to the veterinarians. Mainly, I will say, centralizing some very key issues to a particular organization in terms of various things, talking about registration of veterinarians with that organization, talking about it defining animal traceability in terms of that meeting the interoperability needs of that organization. So we were then concerned as veterinarians because we felt that this would not, one, be fair to all the farmers because there's an issue of access and so on and so forth. Secondly, veterinarians are already subjected to a registration process with the South African Veterinary Council. And we have run schemes before and have never needed to be registered with any private organization. So that was also a concern because that was not clarified. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why we felt that we needed to work with haste with this was that in that version that was provided and in the submission made by the DG, it was indicated that it had been completed on the 23rd and this would be looked at by the ministerial task team on the 24th and then signed by the minister and immediately gazetted. We then felt that we needed as an organization to sound the bell to say, no, but this cannot be. We cannot provide a version of this nature of this scheme, which is supposed to be open to various users within the country, also be open to veterinarians to be able to utilize the scheme and to allow other traceability systems to be used. Because, for instance, government has developed a traceability system. They term it the LITH system. And if which may be not as interoperable with the version of the traceability system that had been indicated.
Okay. So, Doc, so that's if how let we, me we, join yeah. you, please. So what we're hearing here essentially is that there was no consultation with bodies such as yourselves. So the due process wasn't followed in terms of consulting you and other organizations. What do you know also about this private body, the RMIS?
The RMIS is an organization of industry and comprises of various it represents, let me say, various interests within industry. And it's an organization that we work well with. However, we're just concerned about the way that the scheme was drafted, you know, in just to look at the one organization, which we knew fully well that does not represent all industry players, all farmers that needed to, you know, to form part of the scheme and so on. Okay. So it was based on that we also sounded that.
Okay.
However, since we have been told, though informally, that the issues that we had highlighted had been indeed looked at also by the MTT. And in the version that will probably go to minister, then it will be a version that does not create a monopoly within the system and leaves it a bit more open for other players as well to come in. And most importantly, to provide a space for the government a traceability system. And therefore, based on that, we then wrote a letter to Minister to indicate that we have had these informal discussions. If that is the case, then withdraw, because our interest was not to be adversarial, but to highlight concerns and issues that may impact on the legality of the entire process. And as such, then that would have delayed the rollout of the vaccine.
Okay.
Otherwise, SAVA, RUVASA, we support the scheme. We support the rollout of vaccine to contain the FMD outbreak. We work on the ground with farmers. We have seen their plight. We work with them every day. We have been playing that role in terms of supporting them in response to the FMD outbreak. So it is not true that SAVA and RUVASA were trying to delay the scheme and the rollout of vaccination. We're merely highlighting areas that we felt were problematic in the scheme in the version that was provided to the court.
You mentioned that you wrote a letter to the ministry. Any word on that? Any responses?
We did
yet?
Write a letter. We have not received a response to our initial letter, as well as we have not received a response to the second letter. So we are hoping that the ministry will then respond to our letter and allay our fears with the indication that indeed those issues have been addressed and the scheme as it stands does not include those matters that we felt were problematic, not only to veterinarians, but also problematic to farmers out there that are dealing with this FMD outbreak.
Thank you, Doc. Dr. Ziyanda Majokweni is the president of the South African Veterinary Association. Thank you so much, Doc. Have a good day.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
MoneyWeb is reporting that figures from the Central Energy Fund have been warning for weeks now that motorists must prepare for a steep increase in fuel prices come tomorrow. The CEF's latest daily calculation of the effect of the exchange rate and the oil price on fuel prices shows that the average under-recovery on diesel exceeded 10 rand a litre during the past month, and that of petrol more than 5 rand a litre. Now, the report further states that the annual increase in levies announced in the national budget will also kick in on Wednesday, the 1st of April. The increase in the general fuel levy, the road accident fund levy, customs and excise duties, and the petroleum products levy will add another 21 cents to the price of every litre of diesel and petrol. Phakamile Hlubi Majola speaks for the Motor Industry Staff Association and joins us now for more in terms of your interventions, I guess, in terms of how to cushion not only your staff members, but South Africans at large. Good afternoon, Phakamile Hlubi Majola. What are some of your interventions?
Yes, good day, and thank you so much for having me on the show. As MISA, we are very, very concerned about what is happening with the fact that by the 1st of April, we're likely to see a very steep hike in the fuel price. And this is why, as a union, we are intervening by raising the alarm. We have called on government, not just in the media, but also in our engagements that we have through NEDLAG, to say that we urgently need some kind of resolution to this. We urgently need for government to either cushion members of the public by reducing levies, as what we've seen in Namibia, or by finding other solutions that are going to support workers and their families. Because as you rightly say, when you add up all of those increases, we all know that generally speaking, when the fuel price goes up, those costs are passed on to the consumer. We've just recently heard, for example, that Santaco intends to also increase the rate, the taxi fare, by at least 5 rand in response to this situation. And then, of course, also on the 1st of April, we are expecting Eskom tariffs to also go up by over 8%. So when you add all of these things together, it is literally the creation of a perfect storm, which will deepen the challenges faced by ordinary workers and their families. Already, the majority of South Africans are struggling on what they earn just to survive from day to day. Once these increases kick in, it's going to make life extremely difficult.
Through your engagements with government, are you finding each other?
Well, we raised this at NEDLAC, where it was not just us as MISA, but other labor stakeholders as well, who strongly laid the issue on the table to say that there has to be a response. What we were told by the deputy president is that government is working on a plan. And I think this was also reinforced over the weekend at the conference in Limpopo that President Cyril Ramaphosa attended. As MISA, we are saying that whilst we've noted that government says that they are making a plan, we are calling on them to act with speed because we are on the eve of these increases being implemented. And right now, as we speak, there is no plan that has been communicated or confirmed. We've also written to officials within the Department of Minerals and Energy to also raise this issue to say that we do need some kind of intervention. And we are justifying it on the basis that these are not ordinary. We're not dealing here with an ordinary situation. During COVID, we were dealing with abnormal circumstances and measures had to be taken. We are asking that we treat this like the extraordinary circumstances of what we were dealing with during COVID. It is beyond our control. There is a war happening in Iran, and we are going to have to be pragmatic and practical and come up with a tangible basket of solutions. Otherwise, we're just going to deepen the socioeconomic crisis that already exists in the country.
You mentioned the Namibian example in terms of what interventions they are putting in place to cushion the blow on their population, including a four-day work week. What were some of the interventions that you placed at government's door to say, this is what you can do, this is what you can do, and this is what you can do?
So, yes, I mean, Namibia is a very good example. They have basically made a decision that they will temporarily reduce fuel levies by 50% for at least 3 months until the end of June in order to try and ensure that they are finding a way to reduce the cost of fuel. Now, on our end, we're saying that we'd like them to look at possibly reducing the fuel levies. As a union, we have also noted some of the other suggestions that have come through regarding, for example, allowing people to work from home. So what we're basically saying is that we have reached a point where solutions have to be found. We cannot wait for this situation. I mean, it's already going to happen. So we have to be practical and start to look at mechanisms that we think are sustainable and that are going to ensure that we make sure that, you know, we continue to support the broader population during this difficult time. So that really is, for us, we believe, very, very important, because up until this point, there hasn't really been a conversation, especially you know, driven by labor in the public space, to say we really need to urgently find a solution to this. It's almost as if we're just waiting for this problem to happen, to sort of, you know, for it to be imposed on us, and then we will respond. It would be good for us to already have a plan going forward to try and mitigate against the harmful effects of what this will bring on us.
Is government moving at a comfortable enough pace for you?
No, they're not, which is why we're calling on them to act with speed, because we are already on the eve of the implementation of all of these increases. And by the way, we had already started raising the alarm around this around the time of the State of the Nation address, when promises were made by President Ramaphosa once again to the effect that government would be looking at reviewing the fuel price and how we arrive at the fuel price. That was a promise that was made during the SONA, and it wasn't the first time that promise was made. In 2018, 2019, that promise was made, and no progress has been made to date. So it is time for them to deliver on the things that they've been saying, because we've now reached the point where we can't wait any longer. We've already seen civil unrest breaking out in other parts of the world as a result of this. Why should we wait for that to happen here?
In news just in, MoneyWeb reporting that South Africa will reduce a tax imposed on fuel to offset the impact of surging oil prices on domestic gasoline. The levy will be reduced by 3 rand per litre for both petrol and diesel in April. This is according to Minister Enoch Godongwana. He is said to have said this in an interview at the South African Investment Conference, which is currently taking place in Johannesburg. And of course, the measure will be announced at a briefing later in the day today, so you can look forward to more on that. Thank you very much for your contribution this afternoon. Phakamile Hlubi Majola speaks for the Motor Industry Staff Association.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
A prolonged conflict in the Middle East could threaten some almost $50 billion of global advertising growth this year and some almost $94 billion over the next 2 years. That's according to a new study from WARC, the experts in marketing effectiveness. The agency has published its Q1 2026 forecast update for global advertising spend 2026 to 2027, which includes three scenarios based on implications of the Gulf energy crisis. Alex Bronswell is head of content at WARC Media and joins us now for more. Alex, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. Perhaps let's start with what the situation was looking like before these tensions in the Middle East, and you can maybe paint a picture for us of the landscape.
Yes, well, I mean, the advertising market globally has been on a really good run in the last few years. We've been in and around double-digit year-on-year growth across the entire industry, of course. Those growth rates vary by the type of media and channel you're talking about. So, for instance, digital channels, areas like social media and search advertising have been doing particularly well. Some of the more traditional areas of the industry, like TV, slightly less so. But generally speaking, it's been a very positive picture, and we'd forecast growth of around 10% for the global ad market in terms of growth this year before recent events occurred.
Right. So that's your baseline scenario. The report suggests that up to 94 billion rand, billion dollars, I beg your pardon, in global ad growth could be wiped out. How serious is the threat and what's driving it?
It's a growing seriousness, I think, of the threat. As we were pulling together the forecast, you know, even a few weeks ago, I think we were very much landing on the sort of baseline scenario as being most likely. But we wanted to give clients and the industry a bit more of a sense of what could happen if the situation deteriorated. And I think we're all feeling now at a day-to-day, week-to-week, you know, time that things are really changing quite quickly, and the scenario, the middle severity scenario, a more prolonged shock, is increasingly feeling likely, which obviously will be a concern to those operating in the industry.
Mm. You describe rising oil prices as acting like a tax on consumers. How does that translate into reduced advertising spend across industries?
It's one of those, probably helpful to look back at some of the other sort of shocks that we've had to the economy and to the market over the last few years. If you look at COVID, if you look at what's happened in Ukraine, but COVID, I think particularly, where advertisers have felt that consumer confidence, consumer spending power is reduced, there is perhaps a reduced impetus or desire to invest in marketing if those brands don't feel that they're going to get the returns that they would do on a normal basis. So that will affect perhaps the level of spend. And then, you know, as the severity of the conflict increases, we begin to approach the territory where advertisers are no longer able to advertise products that they can't fulfill those orders, they can't sell the products. You know, mm-hmm. we saw with automotive in the pandemic, with certain tech companies as well, with the availability, the accessibility of semiconductors, that ability to actually sort of, you know, provide your product is going to mean that you have to cut back your spend entirely.
Which sectors are most exposed to this particular crisis?
It's the ones that I think that you would expect. Travel and tourism, for instance, that those companies will operate on as very specific seasonal windows, and if they miss their season for advertising to their audience, then that spend will come down quite significantly. Mm-hmm. Automotive, of course, I mean, it's an industry that will depend heavily on oil. But also those, you know, consumer-facing sectors where there is a sort of dependency on products like grain and fertilizer, so consumer products, food products, those are where we see, you know, the impact of potential supply chain shocks that could result in higher pricing and reduced consumer spending power.
Social media platforms are showing strong growth, though. What's sustaining that momentum?
I think to look at social platforms, I think you have to sort of consider the fact that the nature of advertising on those platforms has changed over the last few years. So, you know, what we talk about at Walk is that the advertisers want to be on Meta, want to be on Amazon and Google as a sort of almost form of digital availability. It's showing up in the right place when a consumer may wish to purchase a product or research a product. So it's not necessarily brand building advertising in the form that we have been accustomed to in the decades that have gone by. I think that enables social platforms to be much more resilient, much more recession proof than the rest of the market. And what we've seen is actually that advertising spend has become increasingly detached from the ups and downs of the global economy, things like GDP changes. Because there is a sense that appearing on those platforms is actually part and parcel of, you know, being on the right shelf in a supermarket or a grocery store now.
Mm. We sort of alluded to your baseline case, and then you've got two scenarios. The third scenario from your baseline is scenario C, where you see a severe systematic shock, prolonged closure of the Strait of Hormuz, and oil reaching $150 per barrel. Talk us through what you see there in that particular scenario and what this means for the industry.
Yeah, this is the most concerning potential scenario. And the way we've looked at this situation is we've modeled it around the 1973 oil crisis. Mm-hmm. So this is where we see a persistent supply shock, you know, multiple rounds potentially of inflation, aggressive monetary tightening across key markets. And as you say, that will potentially result in as much as $100 billion being removed from the advertising market over the next couple of years. And in that situation, we would probably see the reduction in growth going beyond the most obviously impacted advertiser categories that we've described, autos and tech, for instance, mm-hmm. into areas like leisure and entertainment, media and publishing, where actually what those brands will be looking at is consumer spending power, because there could be this sort of, you know, potential double whammy effect of consumers having to pay higher prices, you know, absorbing the inflation from higher goods prices. They're also then being penalized for, you know, higher prices at the petrol pump. And that compounding effect will result in the sort of broader industry having to reassess their plans.
Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Alex. Alex Bronswell is head of content at Walk Media.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
As we have been reporting here on MoneyWeb, projections from the Central Energy Fund and industry analysts indicate one of the largest monthly fuel hikes on record is coming tomorrow. This as a direct result of the ongoing tensions between Israel, the United States and Iran, which have had a direct hit on energy supplies. Getting a fuel-efficient car can prove prudent in such times. We speak now to Errol Levine of Whaley about this, in case you're contemplating getting yourself a new ride or are thinking of an upgrade. Thank you very much, Errol, for joining us. Maybe before we get into what is more fuel-efficient, what is the vehicle market looking like before the tensions in the Middle East?
So we haven't seen any real changes. So I think the consumer is adjusting currently now. We have seen a large amount of fuel stations without fuel. And I think this is just down to consumers out there being erratic and storing fuel. Mm. But the shift hasn't happened yet. But previously before this, I think we already saw a shift that consumers were looking to downgrade their vehicles. And it wasn't only due to the fuel price, but obviously due to the economic situation currently. Mm-hmm. So I think with the shift of the fuel price that we've seen now, a lot of the consumers we've seen are slowly looking at more fuel-efficient vehicles and even shifting towards hybrid vehicles. We haven't seen the shift towards EV vehicles, which is fully electric vehicles yet, mm-hmm. but I'm sure that will be on the cards as that EV model starts evolving in South Africa.
Absolutely. So what we're hearing essentially is that the pre-owned car market was looking like an option for many people.
So I think it's a great option for many people, especially if they've got a budget. So as the rand dollar weakens and the fuel prices increase on our side, you'll see increasing in new car pricing and parts. Obviously, the alternative is a good pre-owned vehicle. So the demand is in double-digit figures on our growth year on year and month on month. So this is where the consumers are actually hedging towards. Instead of buying a new vehicle, they're looking at the pre-owned market now.
Mm-hmm. What about owners of high consumption vehicles like older large SUVs? What is it that you are seeing in terms of their choices?
So we haven't seen a real shift yet. So I'm going to expect the next couple of months we are going to see a shift where those consumers are going to look to downgrade to more fuel efficient vehicles. But as the newer models have come out, majority of the cars are very fuel efficient that are in the market. But the heavy gas guzzling vehicles, we have seen a lower demand for those vehicles in the market. And I think that's going to continue as the fuel price increases.
Dudu walks through one of your shops and she says, I'm looking for a new car. All I know is that I can afford 500 rand for petrol each month. I guess what I'm trying to drive home is, how do you walk a customer through what it is that they can have realistically and what it is they can't have?
So first, we have to just see what their monthly budget is. Are they going to be paying cash? Are they financing the vehicle? We have to see what their disposable income is if they finance a vehicle per month. Over and above that, obviously, we have to ask the consumer, do they aware that they have to have insurance on the vehicle and there's still maintenance? Then the next question comes to, what is the vehicle used for? Is it an SUV for a family? Is it a smaller runaround vehicle? Then we can start minimizing which vehicles we can actually isolate for the consumer. From that, then we've got a wide variety of vehicles. And obviously, the smaller the engine is, there's a lot of very reliable, fuel-efficient vehicles. But it'll all come down to the budget and what the practicality and the use of the vehicle is actually used for.
And if I want a new vehicle?
New vehicles, there's a huge variety and a huge selection of cars. So as I mentioned, a lot of hybrids. I mean, a Toyota Cross, you're having a look at the Suzuki Swift, very fuel-efficient vehicle as well. So the market has shifted towards more fuel-efficient vehicles and especially hybrid vehicles. So the hybrid vehicle, you are going to get an extended range, which is fantastic. And then as the EV evolves over here, that's going to be a big advantage. Obviously, there's a lot less maintenance on the vehicle and no fuel spendage.
And if you're selling, what considerations are there?
Selling, I mean, the guys have plenty options. The market has actually changed. Previously, you'd have to go to the physical dealership, get a price, and then maybe go to the next dealership due to online and a very competitive market that takes the client 90 seconds to load a vehicle, and they're going to get multiple offers. And this is a lot more efficient for the client. I mean, as a Whaley example, they come out and they pay for the vehicle there and then cash in the account, and then they get a selection to buy a vehicle immediately as well. So due to the internet, the efficiency has gone through the roof. And just giving the consumer a lot more option and giving the consumer the best possible price for their vehicle.
You mentioned the uptake for EV, electric vehicles in South Africa is not where it's supposed to be, or rather it's not nearly enough, right? So what are you seeing in terms of maybe the longer term? When do you perceive we will catch up?
So this all comes down to the infrastructure. So yeah. Overseas, you can see the infrastructure is in place. There's a lot of charging points and power points available for the consumer, like a fuel station. As South Africa grows and they see the EV market expanding, I think those stations will become more prominent and consumers won't have the option to think, is that they're going to be able to charge the vehicle? Is there going to be electricity? Mm. There is going to be an option for that, but I think that's more of a long-term outlook.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Errol, for your time this afternoon. Errol Levine, a CEO of Wheelie.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
You've been listening to MoneyWeb at Midday. We're here every weekday at noon with the latest in current affairs, the economy and policy. You can always catch the podcast version a little later. Thank you very much for making us part of your day. Until next time, bye-bye.